Cześć. Od początku roku zastanawiam się, jak to jest, że amerykańskie wojsko z taką łatwością obeszło lub przeszło przez obronę chińską i rosyjską. Jak to jest, że podobno wysokiej jakości i dobry sprzęt radziecki, rosyjski oraz chiński nie dał sobie kompletnie rady z wojenną machiną amerykańską. Zastanawia mnie też, jakie przełożenie ma to na sytuację w Cieśninie Tajwańskiej, a także jaka jest sytuacja wojska w Chinach, jak oni to odbierają. Postanowiłem więc spytać trzech ekspertów wojskowych amerykańskich, znajomych, których znam od lat i bardzo cenię ich opinię. Zapraszam do wysłuchania. W ramach operacji Absolute Resolve chińskie radary JY-27A i rosyjskie systemy S-300 podobno nawet nie wystrzeliły. Czy była to awaria samego sprzętu, brak przeszkolenia lokalnych operatorów, czy też dowód na przewagę USA w zakresie walki elektronicznej?
Well, Richard, I think in Operation Absolute Resolve, the results are, you know, astounding with over 150 US aircraft essentially entering Venezuelan airspace, being able to execute a special operations mission, abduct and take President Maduro and his wife, and then to get out of the country without losing an aircraft. And I think only one helicopter received any gunfire. So none of the systems that the Venezuelans had purchased from Japan, China, specifically the JY-27 Alpha anti-stealth, advertises an anti-stealth radar specifically designed to detect U.S. Air Force F-22s and the F-35, and that obviously didn't happen. So your question is, why didn't that happen? And I think it's and nothing was shot down. The Venezuelans had the Russian surface-to-air missile system, the S-300, and none of those missiles fired. And I think part of the answer is that they also had another system called the Pantsir S-1 gun missile hybrid that was specifically designed to shoot down drones and helicopters, so that they had gotten from the Russians as well. So why didn't it work? And I think it's most likely a combination of the things that you've mentioned, but I would say probably overwhelmingly it was the U.S. Spectrum dominance, their ability to understand the electromagnetic spectrum and exploit it. And they were able to do that because they did, you know, their intelligence preparation of the battle space for weeks before that. So you had U.S. aircraft carrier Gerald R. Ford, largest carrier in the world. You had an amphibious ready group. You had a number of ships that have, you know, Aegis radars. We have our national intelligence systems in space. We have all kinds of things. And there was even reports that the CIA may have had teams on the ground there. So we were able to, in the weeks, several weeks, you know, 8-10 weeks before the actual operation, we were mapping the electromagnetic environment. And we knew what platforms that they had, what radars that they had, like this J-27 Alpha, and the systems that they had. And then our own ability to dominate the spectrum through things like an EF-18 Growler electronic attack squadron and aircraft were able to jam radars. So they were able to, in some way, blind the radars that we've mentioned. They were able to, you can do that through just broad white noise jamming. You can do it through selective jamming. There's probably spoofing going on where you're sending out false signals of who's where and when. And then there's other things like, you know, even in the cyber domain, what did we do with their command and control system? And you have to think of this kind of military operation as this spectrum of the electromagnetic spectrum across a sensor to shooter timeline or a sensor to shooter kill chain. So a defender like Venezuela would defend, think, okay, I have to sense threats coming at me. Then I have to take that information I have to display it. I have to know what's on that information. Then I have to make a decision on what I want to do with what I see. And then I have to employ some kind of countermeasure, a missile, a gun, something like that. This has been called the OODA loop, the observe, orient, decide, act loop. And the enemy or the combatant that can get that OODA loop very tight usually wins. And this was developed by Colonel John Boyd back in the 70s from his experience in Vietnam and in aerial air-to-air combat. This idea of observing what your enemy is doing, orienting yourself, making a decision, and then acting before your enemy can act will win. And so in this case, the United States military, through all services, not a joint force, was able to observe, orient, decide, and act before the Venezuelans could respond in any way, shape, or form. So I think that's the overwhelming reason why it was so successful. I think there's another reason, which is the hodgepodge, if you will, of systems that the Venezuelans had. Chinese radars, Russian surface-to-air missiles, maybe Cuban rifles. I mean, all kind of Cuban guards around the president. So you had all these different systems. And so, as an American living here in Europe, I have systems and items that I've had in my life from traveling around the world that I brought from America that are here in Switzerland. And sometimes my plugs from America, not sometimes, my plugs from America won't work in a Swiss electric plug. And so I have to adapt that. And sometimes when you adapt it, it will burn up because of different frequencies and power systems. You can lose things. So I think the China or the Venezuelans experience that to some degree. And then there's other things about how adequately trained were the people that operated the radars, the people that operated the command and control networks, the people that operated the surface-to-air missile sites or the gun sites, batteries. How well did they train? How well did they communicate with each other? Did they even speak the same language? Had they done exercises together? Had they, done the whole kill chain training, where they actually went from I sense something, I've detected it, I've analyzed it, and now I'm going to shoot something and actually shoot something? Did they do that level of training? And my guess is they probably had not done very much of it. Obviously, because it was a blitz, and we were unable to react.
So if this were, let's say, Chinese weapons in China, they would have done much better. If the Americans attacked Chinese using their own weapons, probably those weapons would have done much better than in Latin America.
That's my assessment. I think right now, given what we've seen with Absolute Resolve and Operation Epic Fury in Iran, I'm starting to see lots of articles which are just the opposite of what we saw last year off after Operation Sindoor, the conflict between Pakistan and India, where Pakistani forces were successful in shooting down up to seven, maybe Indian Air Force fighters. There was a lot of crowing, a lot of bravado coming out of Chinese media talking about made in China, our Chinese weapon systems are superior. Look what we did against the Western military equipment that India had, and our Chinese stuff is much better. And then that's what we heard last year after that operation between India and Pakistan. A lot of Chinese statements about how great their stuff was. And we saw a rise in actually exports in Chinese equipment, military equipment. Now, after Operation Absolute Resolve, and now what we're seeing in Epic Fury is that you don't hear much from the Chinese at all. In fact, you're hearing the opposite. And my concern is a lot of people are saying, oh, this proves that Chinese equipment is inferior, and therefore we don't have to worry. And that means for United States and the Congress, there'll be less pressure to continue to build up the U.S. Military. We have to look at, for instance, in the Taiwan Strait, when you take China has a completely integrated air and defense missile defense system, an integrated ground-based air defense system, an integrated strategic rocket system, and they're going to be operating with their own integrated all on the same language, all training together, which we see supported by their own national intelligence set network of satellites, their own GPS system called the BeiDou system. So they have their own precision navigation and timing system that supports their weapons, which will be harder to, for the U.S. to interdict or influence, maybe, maybe not, but something that makes another challenge for the U.S. or Taiwan to get into. So I think we can't take lessons away that the Chinese systems that failed in Venezuela and Iran are therefore ipso facto not going to be a threat in the Taiwan Strait.
Richard, I think it was a function of all three. I think the big takeaway for the West and the United States is not to underestimate the weapon systems that the Venezuelans had. They have very capable, on paper at least, those weapon systems are very capable, and I suspect in the right hands, those air defense systems would also be very capable. When you have to integrate the sensors and then the actual shooters or the missiles, it's not necessarily easy when you're working with just within one system itself. And there, what the Venezuelans were trying to do were integrate Chinese radars with the Russian S-300, for example, another Russian missile system. And I can tell you that the S-300 is a very capable weapon. I've spoken with U.S. pilots, and they're very concerned about that particular weapon systems. And when it's in the right hand, and it's integrated correctly with the sensors, it's a serious threat. So I think that was part of it, that trying to integrate a Chinese radar with Russian missiles. And this is perhaps an oversimplification, but that's a complicated process, and I suspect that there were problems there. In addition, just on the Venezuela side, I suspect that they had command and control challenges as well. I mean, how many times have they actually exercised that system? And I suspect it wasn't too often, if at all. Not to mention then the challenges of operating those systems if you have a power outage, which the U.S. forces did right away. I just don't think. I think if we're in different situations in other areas, that the people operating those systems might have backups for those types of situations, not just with the power, but with other sensors and the different bands that they can operate in. I suspect, and I'm not an expert on Central or South American militaries, but I suspect that there was just a lack of training, and that was probably another to in addition to the trying to integrate those systems, that the training of the Venezuelan forces that were operating them was probably lacking. And then lastly, you had mentioned the U.S. capabilities. Yes, we have the U.S. does have very good capabilities. The stealth on that we have, and then the electronic on our aircraft, and then the electronic warfare capabilities that can blind systems is arguably the top in the world, or one of the best in the world. And so the reason I caveat all this is we could become, or individuals that have seen this might suspect then, well, the U.S. can do whatever they want because they just dominate, and there's no threat from these types of systems. I think that would be a mistake to do that. I think those are very capable systems.
Jakie konkretne sygnatury elektroniczne lub przerwy częstotliwości udało się zidentyfikować wojsku amerykańskiemu dzięki skutecznemu ominięciu HQ-9B? Jest to flagowy chiński system obrony powietrznej dalekiego zasięgu w rzeczywistych warunkach walki. Czy rozwiązania te mogłyby mieć zastosowanie w konflikcie w Cieśninie Tajwańskiej?
think you understand I can't talk too specifically about exact frequencies and the like. I would comment, though, that remember, stealth is not just a single capability like radar observant material or stealthy shapes. It's a number of things that all work together. And they're based on known radar signatures, properties of radars and the like. It's not to say it's perfect. It's definitely not perfect. We saw an F-117 get shot down over Serbia in the past. And so we can't target stealth. But clearly we've done our homework and the PRC weapons designers missed a few points because they built the HQ-9. They sold it as a capable of countering stealth when what we saw in Venezuela and Iraq or in Iran demonstrated the opposite. So look, I don't think anybody should be too proud or too confident, overly confident in stealth. It's the group of things. It's the combination of capabilities that make it as effective as it is, not just one single capability.
Chiny mają udokumentowaną strategię obniżania poziomu eksportowanej broni. Ma to uzależniać klienta i trzymać tak zwane ostrzejsze ostrze dla chińskiej armii ludowo-wyzwoleńczej. W jakim stopniu można niepowodzenia w Wenezueli oraz Iranie przypisać tym celowym ograniczeniom eksportowym, a w jakim systemowym wadom chińskiej architektury obronnej?
Yeah, that's a great question, Richard. I think it's in China's interest that when they do export a weapon system, that it does nonetheless function. While some of it may be downgraded slightly, it still should be able to perform at a higher level than they obviously did in Venezuela. I don't think that had much of an impact at all, because it would be in PLA's interest that when the CCP's interest that when they transfer these weapon systems that they perform on the battlefield. And here obviously they didn't. When they do these exports, they might withhold the top of the capability in case they have to confront that weapon system themselves and would have an easier time defeating it. But nonetheless, I would suspect that did not play a significant role in the ease, in the apparent ease in which the U.S. military took down Venezuela's air defenses.
It's a very good question. I'm sure the Chinese weapons designers are asking themselves the same thing. I guess if I were to guess, and I don't know, but if I were to guess, I would say that the stuff they sold is not the same level of capability that they kept for themselves. We're actually pretty open with our closest friends. We share pretty much everything we have. I'm not going to say it's everything, but the stuff that we sell is extremely capable, and people wouldn't come back to us to buy our fighters and our radars and all that stuff, Patriot, if they doubted it was as good as they said. The other thing interesting about, just in general terms, about what PRC weapon sales compared to the U.S., is the U.S. system comes complete with training. It comes with tech manuals. It comes with follow-on maintenance. It comes with the whole thing. And so everything is there. Whereas when the PRC sells it, as I understand, is it comes with nothing. You basically are buying the kit, but you're not getting any kind of manuals for maintenance. You're not getting a maintenance tail, logistics tail, or any of those things. So Venezuela and Iran were kind of on their own.
Podczas gdy Stany Zjednoczone sprawdzały chińską technologię w walce, chińska armia ludowo-wyzwoleńcza obserwowała amerykański sprzęt, czego Pekin dowiedział się na przykładzie szybkich, intensywnych ataków dekapitacyjnych w Caracas.
Well, there's always, when you execute your high-end strategy, there's always risk that the others are gonna see it and possibly learn from it. But remember, there's the other option, too. You may just end up deterring them when you demonstrate that, the best they have isn't good enough. So I suspect there was as much of the former as the latter here. What did they learn? Well, the biggest thing they learned is that you're not immune, both in terms of Iran and Venezuela. Venezuela was the lower threat case, the simpler case, due just to distances and, the level of sophistication of their defenses. But in both cases, you can run, but you can't hide. Again, it was not one single capability. I keep hearing people say, you're not going to win wars with just air power alone. Well, there's a bunch of problems with that statement. One, you don't ever really win anything. You achieve your objectives. And so it's nice to, okay, the objectives were to get a problematic leader in our hemisphere who was openly defying our concerns about human rights, destroying its own people, its negative impact in the region. We'd warned him. If you remember, Maduro, you know, famously showed great defiance, saying, come get me. And, well, okay, we did. Just that, saying the U.S. is no longer afraid to act, that we don't issue threats, we just do what everybody understands to be in the United States' interest, certainly had a strong resonance in the halls of Zhongnanhai in Beijing. And that's a good thing. You know, telling your potential adversaries or current adversaries that you're not afraid to act is, a wonderful deterrent. Don't even think about it. Come to the table in good faith. Let's solve this through dialogue and not, you know, all those things that we say, we now demonstrate that we are going to enforce those.
Według doniesień, ponad 85% czołowych generałów Chińskiej Armii Ludowej zostało usuniętych ze służby lub zniknęli na początku tego roku. Czy chińskie wojsko jest w obecnej sytuacji zdolne do przeprowadzenia zakrojonej na wielką skalę akcji, czy też ich struktura dowodzenia została skutecznie osłabiona?
Yeah, so I've been following the purges issue for quite some time, and it's clear Xi Jinping, over the course of his time in office since the end of 2012, he's purged literally thousands and tens of thousands of members of the Communist Party of China and members of the PLA, the People's Liberation Army, and their Central Military Commission. Along all of those years of the purges, what have we seen in terms of the operation or the capabilities and operations of the PLA? They haven't gone down. They've actually increased. So if you go back to 2012 and you said, What did the Chinese have in terms of ballistic missiles? What did they have in terms of a navy? In 2012, the Chinese had no aircraft carriers. Today, they have 3 aircraft carriers that are operational. 2 of them operated in the Western Pacific last year. One of them, the Liaoning, the first carrier, went east of Iwo Jima by 500 miles. So operating east of the second island chain. China, since 2022, has been operating on a daily basis in large numbers around Taiwan. The purges have gone on, and operation tempo has gone up. The purges have gone on, and they've acquired better missile systems and military equipment. So there's people, again, out there that write and say, well, they've purged all these generals and admirals, therefore they don't know what to do. They're blind. They don't know how to operate. And I remind people that there's 2 million people inside the PLA. There wasn't just 5 guys running the People's Liberation Army and conducting these deployments with aircraft carriers east of Iwo Jima or south around circumnavigating ships, circumnavigating Australia, shooting off live-fire missiles off of Sydney Harbor and stopping commercial air traffic out of Australia, or conducting operations in the Gulf of Aden continuously since 2008, the end of 2008. If all their generals and admirals have been purged and they're incompetent and they don't know what to do, then how are all these events happening? So I would say a better lesson is to say they're weeding out corruption, they're weeding out people that aren't true war fighters, and probably they're weeding out people that maybe ideologically did not have the same intensity of objective that Xi clearly has towards Taiwan.
It would seem to me, and actually you have a front row seat to this movie, is the intensity and that China is testing Taiwan with going into its air and sea space on a daily basis now, and then with greater and greater numbers, is probably indicative of China, the PLA, being able to operate despite the purge of these senior leaders. With these purges, again, it might cause us to be the West to take China less seriously as far as their defense capabilities. People can be easily replaced, leaders can be easily replaced, and perhaps even with leaders that are much more capable than those that were purged to begin with. I don't read too much into that. I still think that the PLA would be a formidable force. I worry about Taiwan because of they've operationalized, obviously, these daily incursions into Taiwan. And I'm afraid, actually, that, you know, just following what Xi Jinping has said, that he has directed his military to be ready to take the island, either blockade or force, and keep the United States out of the fight. Despite these purges, I still suspect there's nothing to indicate that he's not on that trajectory. And when you look at these daily incursions into Taiwan's airspace and sea space, it's troubling. And I suspect that these purges haven't had too much of an impact on that or their capabilities to perform large-scale operations. And it's quite possible that it's enhanced it. Maybe, I know people suspect that the reason for the purges is either political or due to corruption, but perhaps it's just to put officers that have that same ideology, share that same ideology that Taiwan is China and belongs to China, and that they should be ready to do that. So as far as all the purges go, I still think that China, the PLA, would be a quite a formidable force.
Dziękuję bardzo i do zobaczenia w przyszłym tygodniu.